Welcome back into another edition of the NBC Sports Pro Basketball Talk Podcast. Brett Polakoff here with Kurt Thielen. What is going on, Kurt?
How you doing this morning, Brett?
Very good. Bright and early, which is always nice, especially for you out on the West Coast. And with us always is Dominic Ridgard of NBC Sports. What is going on, Dom?
Hey, how you doing? How you doing, Brett? You're looking pretty prophetic over there with that Cavs pick of yours.
Well, I mean, first we'll get into game three here in a second, but first of all, with that prediction, I was assuming a healthy Kyrie Irving, so I really got nothing to say because nobody expected, you know, once he went out for the Cavaliers to be leading in this series.
LeBron did, clearly.
Still your pick though, Brett. You can own it. Still your pick.
I'll be owning it if they win the championship. For sure. All right, well, let's get into game three here. So another stellar effort from LeBron James and the Cavaliers. Got up by as many as 20 points before the Warriors finally, you know, found their shot a little bit towards the end, roared back to within one with a few minutes left. But Cleveland hangs on, 96-91, takes game three, 2-1 lead in the series. LeBron James, 40 points, 12 rebounds, 8 assists, 4 steals, 2 block shots, and played 46 of the game's 48 minutes. Let's start with you, Kurt. What are you seeing out of this Cavaliers team? I think my biggest surprise in Game 3 was that they were able to get out to such a large lead with the style that they've been playing.
Yeah, I mean, they obviously, and we talked about this last game, one thing that didn't change was the defense, and we kept thinking, hey, all right, well, this is now, you know, the Warriors are going to adjust. They're going to make their moves. They're going to figure things out. They didn't really. I mean, they're still not, moving the ball as much as they did before. There's a little more ISO from them, and I think that this is a credit to two things. I mean, you've got to credit Cleveland's defense here, first of all. They're really just knocking them out of rhythm. They're not letting them get going, at least until the fourth quarter. And I don't know that anything changed in the fourth quarter so much other than, like, Steph Curry started knocking down ridiculous shots at points, I mean, which he's done all season. I mean, I don't think that this is something that they can't carry over. I just think he started hitting shots, and I think the other key was, you know, they found something with David Lee and having that second playmaker that Cleveland has to cover, setting the picks there, because they stopped covering Draymond Green. And, I mean, you guys saw that in fourth quarter. I mean, Draymond Green was – you couldn't be more wide open, and he doesn't want to take it. He's now out of – in fact, I think that turnover at the end, the Steph Curry behind-the-back turnover, all season long – Draymond has set that thing and popped to that spot, and he just thought he'd go there. And Draymond's so afraid of the three right now that he didn't go to the spot he always goes to. I think David Lee's
right, Kurt?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and you know, it's funny. The Cavaliers did this last round too. Against the Hawks. I mean, look, Paul Millsap and Jeff Teague had hit threes all season long. They dared them to. They haven't. They're not doing it with Curry and Thompson, which is wise. But everybody else, they're like, all right. You did this all season, but now do it under pressure. Prove to me you're going to do it here, and they haven't done it.
Dom, what did you see out of the Cavaliers last night in Game 3?
You know, out of the Cavs, I saw them, you know, stick to the game plan. The rotations are still really short. They're really only trusting 6 or 7 guys. And it's funny, you know, when going into the series, you would never have thought – offense would be the problem for the Warriors. You know, it would be obviously stopping LeBron and then like before he got hurt, stopping Kyrie. But their defensive game plan is really impressing me. Like Kurt said, you know, they're forcing the ball to the people who they want to take shots. You know, Harrison Barnes, 0-for-8, Draymond 2-for-10. You know, they're making the people that they want to beat them have to earn it, which is a lot of coaches and a lot of analysts say that's what you're supposed to do, but it's easy to say, it's a lot harder to do it. And the Cavs are actually doing it. They're forcing the ball to the people they want to take the shots, and the Warriors are missing those shots. You know, you always hesitate to use certain words, but to me, the Warriors look nervous, and they look for some of them, and the stage is starting to look a little big and bright for some of them. And they're uncomfortable, and it's obvious. And, you know, you kind of give them a pass in game one. You say, you know, they get the nerves out of the way. Even in game two, you know, but three games in, you kind of have established who's going to do what in this series for the most part. And it looks like the stage is a little too bright for some of the guys on the Warriors, and those are the guys who the Cavs want to take the shots.
No, I think you're absolutely right about that. I was just going to bring up, it's a great point. You know, the Warriors look tentative, and I think all season long, they talked about this a little bit on the broadcast. The Warriors won 67 games, and they blew everybody out. They didn't have a lot of close games. They weren't tested on a night-to-night basis. The way the Warriors play, you can't prepare for that offense. You can't prepare for Steph Curry and Klay Thompson the way they shoot, you know, during the throes of the regular season when you're playing four games and five nights sometimes. And I don't think the Warriors faced any adversity, you know, during the regular season. And we talked about before how they had a pretty nice road to the finals. They didn't have to play the Clippers, and they didn't have to play the Spurs. And those are the two teams in the West that would have given them, I think, the adversity that they needed, you know, in advance of this matchup with the Cavaliers in the finals. You know, the Warriors are also, to me, one of those front-running teams. Now, granted, they've been the best defensive team all season long, so there's something to that, you know, as far as how good they are. But they're a team that likes to whoop it up, celebrate, make ridiculous threes. You know, Draymond Green has run his mouth all season long. That's who they are. That's their identity. You know, Steve Kerr said that last night in one of the interviews. He said, look, you know, I just want these guys to be playing the way that we played all season, which is loose and fun. And they're not doing that right now. We saw in the first half them kind of hanging their head. You know, body language wasn't great on a lot of those plays. And I think what you said is absolutely right. You know, they haven't been tested this season. And we're seeing right now on this big stage, when they're finally hit with some adversity, they haven't handled it well.
No, but I think we need to say this. Their defense has been fine. I mean, their defense, LeBron's putting up 40, but it's not an efficient 40. I mean, they aren't putting up great numbers offensively. The defense has been fine against the Cavaliers. They've held them well enough. They're just, like we said, they're used to putting up points. They're used to getting out. And I think the other thing the Cavaliers have done brilliantly is take away the easy buckets. This is a team that, you know, they're not turning the ball over much. This is Curry was fourth in the league in steals. They like to force some live ball turnovers and get out and going. They're not getting those. And they've done a fantastic job in transition defense. They are getting back, and they're finding the guys at the arc, and they're not letting them have the buckets that they're used to getting. You know, just the things that fueled those 10-0 runs. They got a steal, and then they found a, you know, play at the arc, and suddenly it's a quick three. Those kind of things are gone, and they're having to grind and work for every bucket now.
Yeah, I think they mentioned on the broadcast that the Cavs had 5 fast break points and the Warriors had 4. So it's like it kind of encapsulates how slow this series is really going and how half-court centric it really is. But, Kurt, I got a question for you. You know, you said their defense is fine, but how much – and now that the series is kind of progressing, how much credit do you give to the Warriors and how much do you think there's just a lack of offensive talent on the Cavaliers? Like, besides LeBron, there's really only – he's really the only, like, plus offensive player. You know, I guess you could say maybe JR or James Jones can shoot, but, you know, he's really the only plus offensive player creator out there on the floor. You know, would this series look even worse if they had more offensive talent? You know what I mean?
No, I do, and I think it's a hypothetical, but yeah, I think that's a lot of it is that you don't have to worry about a second shot creator. Look, what I was trying to get at is that they're doing the job. They're holding them enough, and I think on the flip side of that, LeBron is getting enough. There's suddenly been comparisons to Allen Iverson and the 2001, Sixers team that got smoked by the Lakers, but how it was late. They played defense and they counted on some volume shooting out of Iverson to get them there. I don't think that's a terrible comparison in the sense that that's kind of where they're at now. They're just like, hey, let's hope, you know, they got 20 from Dellavedova. They're hoping that Tristan Thompson or Mozgov or somebody has a good night and pitches in a few extra points. But by and large, they're counting on LeBron to put up you know, in the last two games, the games they've won, it's not only, you know, it's not just the 40 points last night, it's the dimes. He had eight, you know, he had eight in this one, he had 11 in the previous one. He's helping getting other guys, and that's been enough because of the defense. They don't, you know, they don't have to play great on offense if they're getting, if they're shutting guys down.
Well, I watched the Warriors during the regular season. This is an older movie now, Dom. I'm not sure if you've seen it or you're going to get the reference. I know Kurt's seen it. Rocky III, okay, I'm bringing it back a few years. But Rocky III, okay, remember the beginning of that movie when Rocky is beating up all these, like, terrible opponents and just killing them all, you know, with ease? And Mr. T, like, is at all those fights, and he's just watching them with disgust. Like, he's like, I can't believe, you know, no one's giving him, you know, a battle here.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I felt watching the Warriors during the regular season. I was, like, disgusted that nobody would actually guard Stephen Curry, that he would just run around and shoot all these shots and nobody would put a body on him all season long. The Cavaliers are finally doing that. You know, they're finally making it tough. When Curry got loose at the end of this game, and we'll get into that because I want to spend some time discussing whether or not that's, you know, did they find themselves? Do they have momentum now going into game four? Or was that just kind of a fluke? So we'll get your thoughts on that in a second. But, you know, Curry, when he did start to get loose at the end of this game, they were running him off two and three screens. You know, and some of those were still contested shots, but it took a lot more effort out of the Warriors to free him up, you know, than we saw for the most part, you know, during the regular season.
Yeah, Brett.
Yeah, well, even in the playoffs, by the way, I mean, Houston in particular was bad about just losing him, and he, more than half his shots in that series were uncontested. And even Memphis, you know, where Conley did a much better job on him, they still, you know, he was still getting loose. He was still getting some shots without having to work like this. And that, yeah, you know, this is where if you're crediting Shumpert and Dellavedova, that's one of the things. They have no help, you know, they have, like, no help assignments at all. Like, if you've got Curry or Thompson, you don't help. You just stay in their jersey.
Yeah, and Brett, to your point about the regular season, that's why I know one of the big stats that was thrown out about Golden State's regular season was point differential. But if you actually watch some of those games, like you said, the teams towards the bottom of the NBA totem pole, when the game got away from them, you can just see them looking forward to the other night. Like, the game's kind of in hand. Even when Golden State pulls their starters, you know, it's like because they win big at Oracle and they get out to these huge leads, in an NBA regular season with 82 games, you know, you could see teams kind of say, all right, we'll pack it in, like, in the third quarter. Like you
For
said,
sure.
it's that's why it's tough, you know, that the 82 regular season is how we project what we're going to see in the postseason. And, you know, there are habits that teams form that, like I said, you can project to how they'll play in the playoffs. But there's also certain things that you can't, that you also have to weed out. You know, it's like the wins that they had against the sub 500 teams when they're smoking them by 25. Like, does that go into your thought process when you're thinking, how are they going to play the Cavs in the NBA Finals? Like, the two don't correlate. I know that that contributed to their regular season success, but it just doesn't carry over as much.
No, I think, you know, that you're absolutely right. You know, and I think that's going to be interesting to see as the series progresses. Is Golden State going to be able to sort of overcome this and be able to play their game? I think youth and inexperience at this level and on this stage is going to be a bigger factor ultimately than we may have expected. So, you know, let's talk about that second half. You know, Cleveland gets out to the big lead, horrible start to the fourth quarter, so the Warriors get right back in it. You know, Kurt, we'll start with you. You know, Warriors came back all the way within 1 point before Dellavedova got that, you know, tough and one to go, and then the Cavaliers were able to stabilize from that point on. Stephen Curry went nuts in the fourth quarter, 17 points, I believe, in the fourth. And he did all that in under 8 minutes. He didn't score his first field goal in the fourth till there was like 7:52 remaining. So he went absolutely crazy towards the end of that game. Is this Stephen Curry finding his shot finally and the Warriors finding some things? Or was this more of a fluke due to the nature of the way that this particular game played out?
You know, I don't know that he's going to hit like that all game next game, but I think he started to find his stroke a little bit. Like I said, A, they had some success with David Lee as the role man. I think you're, you know, well, I don't think Kerr said as much as you'll see David Lee more next game. That provided something to, you know, it also gives them something to attack. I mean, David Lee is a bad defensive player. He just is. He's going to open up some things that the Cavaliers can go at. That's why he doesn't play. You know, but they're going to get it out there because I think, like we said, you know, they just weren't covering Draymond. They weren't covering anybody else, you know, Bogut or whoever was setting the pick. They were just daring them to, you know, those other guys to beat them. But I don't know if it's sustainable at that level. I mean, he hit some really contested, kind of ridiculous Steph Curry-like shots. He's going to have, you know, he's going to hit some of those, but I don't know if he's going to sustain it at that level. That said, if he hits, if he just starts to find some of it, I mean, he was missing, he was 1 of 9 in uncontested shots in game two. You know, if he starts to hit some of those and some of that stuff starts to fall and he starts to draw other defenders, then the offense might be able to open up some. Right now, guys are, you know, when a guy makes a cut off the ball in this game, you watch, they're physical with them. They're bumping guys and grinding, and they're really, I think this is one of the other things that the Warriors are just, they're stopping. I don't think they're used to the physical play. They're not used to having to really work off the ball like this all the time. And it's all of a sudden, they're, rather than continuing cuts and making moves, they seem to slow down.
What's your take on the Warriors' second half, Dom? Do you think this is, you know, did they find something here? Or is this just because, you know, the Cavaliers sort of took their foot off the gas?
Yeah. Well, it's funny how we talked about LeBron playing 46 minutes. He literally got to rest for 1 minute in the fourth quarter, and they went on an 8-0 run. And you can see the guy just stand up like, all right, you know, he probably checks himself in at this point. David Blatt probably tells him, you know, whenever you feel fine to come back in, just come back in.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can see him stand up just, okay, taking off the wraps on his back, and, you know, he's like, all right, I can barely even, like, take a sip of Gatorade, and we let up 8-0 run.
But yeah, you get a feeling, yeah, it's pretty much like Mike D'Antoni trying to keep Kobe out of a game at this point. Like, he's not listening. He's coming in.
Yeah, exactly. But I agree. If you look at who played in the fourth quarter, you know, Klay and Steph and Iguodala played the entire quarter. And then after that, David Lee played 10.5 minutes. So I think that that's a unit that could definitely – that will definitely get more run in game four.
Yeah.
And like Kurt said, you know, David Lee might be a bad defensive player, but, you know, defense, like I said, oddly enough, isn't really their problem. It's scoring, and which we thought we wouldn't say about the Warriors, but it is. And I definitely think that they found something with that lineup. I definitely think that Iguodala has been shooting actually really well from the floor, and that kind of surprised me. I thought, you know, his impact would be felt more on the defensive end, and it has. But, you know, his scoring has really helped the team. I think you're going to see David Lee play a lot more. My question, though, at least heading forward, is, like, how – because they're down 2-1, and unlike when they were down 2-1 with Memphis, like, there's a feeling that they could lose this series. And you're starting to lean that way, just how the series has played out. How desperate do you start to get? Do you think that we'll see – you know, I think we'll definitely see minutes change, like minutes allocated differently, but do you think we could see a lineup change? Do you think we'll see Harrison Barnes' minutes reduced drastically and he almost just becomes like a starter in name but not a starter in minutes kind of thing?
A few things, okay? So on the David Lee lineup, I think absolutely, you know, they did find something there, especially offensively, and as we mentioned, the offense is what needs some help right now. And he wasn't terrible defensively in that fourth quarter. He was fine. So if they can get 10, 15 minutes, I mean, he had 11 points in like 10 minutes or, you know, 11 minutes, like not a lot of playing time. So he's more of a threat to make plays out of those screen and roll. So I will give the Warriors credit for maybe finding something with David Lee, and if they play him some more minutes in the right situation, that could be a nice adjustment for them. But I'm not willing to say that Stephen Curry's back after that performance, and the main reason why is because once the game gets out of hand like that, the best player on the other team has the greenest of green lights to shoot because there's no consequences at that point. I mean, it's the ultimate just throw up whatever you want because we're down so much and we got to start making some shots. I mean, the shots he was taking is like you would kill your teammate in pickup basketball.
Yeah.
If you would just, you know, dribble down the floor and then immediately launch a 35-footer, you know? Curry's capable of making those shots, and he got really hot in that fourth quarter. But I don't think it's sustainable because I don't think he's going to look to take those type of shots in the first half of game four because those aren't good shots. They're shots he had to take given the situation of the game. So I don't think the Warriors found anything. I think mentally they might have, you know, helped themselves a little bit by coming back in the fourth saying, hey, look, we can put a run on this Cavaliers team, but the way that they did it with Curry taking those shots is not any type of roadmap or recipe for success, and we're not going to see it in the first half of a finals game ever. He's never going to do that when it's a close game or the game is tied to start.
Let me throw this out. The other thing in talking about Lee, I will say this. One of the when I was in San Francisco and being Cleveland for game four, but when I was in San Francisco, one of the Warrior staff told me that part of the problem they've had with Lee this year is his conditioning. That they don't think he's really gotten in the kind of shape he needs to. When sent to the bench, he never really, you know, because remember, he was a starter who ended up on the bench because Draymond, just Lou Gehrig'd him there. Just, you know, they were playing too well for the switch, and he forced him to sit.
Right.
Lee publicly took that really well, but he never, his work ethic wasn't quite the same, and he isn't in this kind of shape where they can play him 30 minutes a night right now. Like, they're going to have to use him in bursts and pick their spots with him. He's just not ready for a ton of run.
Yeah, to that point, you know, he might not be ready, but it's one of those things where if Harrison Barnes is going to play 20 minutes and give you no points, if Andrew Bogut's going to play 18 minutes, give you 4 points basically on putbacks, and is basically fumbling the ball every time you do a screen and roll with him, like, he has to – it's one of those things where it's like, you know, you're going to have to play more. He only played 13 minutes in that game. I think he's got to play, at least the way it looked, I think it would help more if he played closer to 20-25, maybe in those spurts you talked about. But just, you know, there's no time really to ease him in or to see if Harrison Barnes will start to figure it out. Like, you don't have time for that anymore. You're down 2-1. You lose one more game, the series pretty much over.
No, they have to be desperate next game, and that's why I'm a little bit surprised Kerr said I'm not changing the starting lineup, but I thought in this game even, Barnes has been it just hasn't been good all series. I really thought, all right, he's going to start Barnes, but he's going to bring Iguodala in, you know, 2 or 3 minutes in. He's just, why are we wasting time with Barnes getting beat? And sure, you know, again, it was more than 5 minutes into the game before we saw Iguodala. I don't know why you don't start him at this point. Like, just put Iggy in. It's what works. And there's no time for loyalty or sticking to, you know, you've got to go with what works. And Barnes does not work right now.
Coaches will tell you it's not who starts a game, it's who finishes it, right? Like, anytime we try to make a big deal about, oh, this guy, you're changing your starting lineup. You know, Alvin Gentry, when he was in Phoenix, he always used to say that. Anytime you tinker with the lineup and we try to make an issue out of it, he's like, guys, it doesn't matter. He's like, it's who I have out there when it matters. There were times when Amari Stoudemire would sit the entire fourth quarter and the Suns would win games in that 2010 season. And, you know, everybody wanted to make a big deal about it. And Gentry's like, it doesn't matter. I mean, he plays when he plays, and Amari was a good guy about it. And we saw last night Harrison Barnes didn't play the fourth quarter, where he played, you know, technically a few seconds. So I don't know about changing the starting lineup necessarily. I mean, Iguodala played 36-plus minutes, so he's getting starters minutes.
Yeah.
And you don't want to mess too much with the defense overall, with the defensive rotations and the continuity of the game, right? I mean, this is the starting five that's played all season long. I think somebody asked Kerr, before or after game two, if he'd consider changing the starting lineup, and his answer was like, we're 80-18. You know, what do you want from me? You know, our record is ridiculous with the starting lineup. It's not something that I'm looking to change, but the rotations will change throughout the game. So it'll be interesting to see. The David Lee thing is, I think David Lee gets as many minutes as long as the Cavaliers' offense doesn't get rolling. When I mean get rolling, like, you know, the role players start to get open, easy looks. LeBron's field goal percentage starts to rise with Lee on the floor. If we see that, I think the Warriors they can't afford to have the Cavaliers spike in offense, but at the same time, they need to spike theirs. So, you know, we'll see David Lee as long as he doesn't completely wreck things on the defensive end of the floor.
Yeah, Brett, I wanna bring up what you talked about with Steph and how you don't think his what his run in the fourth quarter is really sustainable. And I agree with you. And I think that I think he really got treated with kid gloves after game two, you know, because he didn't have a good game. And it was obvious that Dellavedova's defense was really bothering him. And everybody was kind of, okay, it happened in game two, but he'll adjust. He's the MVP. We'll wait to see what happens in game three. He had 3 points in the first half, you know. He had, like you said, he had 17, a lot of it coming in that desperation mode in the fourth quarter, like you talked about. And the thing that kind of bugs me when we're kind of being critical of certain players is players like Steph, who's a shooter, like that's what he does. He shoots. It's tough to be critical of them because people just say, okay, well, he just missed shots, you know. Those are shots that he makes. Well, a lot of those shots were bad shots, and it's tough when a guy is a bad shot maker. Because he'll make enough that kind of justify him taking them. But when he misses four or five of them, no one says anything. Like, some of the shots he took were really, really bad. And then B, if you're a shooter and you're missing shots, like, that's a bad thing. Like, that's not good. You know, oh, he's a shooter. He's just missing shots. Well, yeah, he's in the finals and he's the MVP. And if he's a shooter, he needs to make those shots or not take bad ones. Like, you have to be critical of guys. If that's what he does and he's not doing it well, that means he's having a bad game. That doesn't mean he's not hitting shots. Like, oh, he's just missing shots. It's like, no, he's not playing well. Like, they can be one and the same. It was kind of frustrating to, you know, to because especially with his counterpart in LeBron, how much he gets beaten up when he doesn't play well. It's like, the guy didn't play well. And I thought he didn't get called out for it. I think he is starting to. After this game, I thought he definitely saved himself a ton of criticism with that late run he had. But you can't escape it when you're the MVP of the league and in the finals and you're not playing well.
No, you're right about that. And not only to your point about him scoring 3 points in the first half, he hit a three about 90 seconds into the game. His next points didn't come till 6:22 of the third quarter, his next field goal.
Yeah.
So if you're the MVP, you cannot go 2.5 quarters basically in the NBA finals without a field goal. That's just, it's unconscionable. It's unacceptable. It's whatever, you know, you want to use to describe it. It's just, it can't happen. And it's, you know, it's a big part of why the Warriors are down 2-1 in this series.
Oh, for sure.
All right. Well, what are we looking for as we look forward to game four here? Obviously it's desperation mode for the Warriors. You can't go down 3-1 and expect to have a chance to win this series. You know, we've talked about the Cavaliers defense. And Kurt, we'll start with you. What can the Warriors do at this point? You know, we've seen what's been going on for 3 games now. It's been a fairly consistent pattern. What can the Warriors do to give themselves a chance and get back into this series?
Yeah, I mean, we talked a little bit about the rotations and everything. I think that they need to find, you know, their defense, like we said, they've got to find a way to pick up the pace of these games a little bit. The games have been at 93.7 possessions per game on average now through three. Just for people at home, that is 7 possessions a game slower than their regular season. They're not getting those in-flow shots. LeBron deserves a ton of credit for this. He is so patient on offense. He's not turning the ball over. He's been, you know, as the point forward, as the guy that the offense is going through, he's been absolutely phenomenal. They've got to find a way to pick that up. They've got to find a way to get a couple turnovers, get a couple easy buckets. You use David Lee. And I think we're all on the same page here. It is desperation mode for them. If they're down 3-1, they're not going to win the series. If they've, you know, look, on the flip side of that, they win game 4, and it's 2-2 heading home, and suddenly everybody's like, yeah, they can win the, you know, like,
right.
You know, suddenly everything looks a lot rosier for them. So I expect. They have not played with that until maybe the fourth quarter, if you want to argue that. They haven't played desperate basketball. And they, again, I think to you know, Brett's earlier point, they never had to this season. Like, they were rolling people. They've had a relatively, you know, injured path in front of them. The outside of being down to the Grizzlies, they haven't had to go with those highly, you know, they haven't had to play this way. They've got to now. They've got to find the desperate Warriors in them, or it's over.
What do you think, Don? What do the Warriors need to do here in game 4 to even things up?
Yeah, I agree with Kurt in that they need to try to speed the game up. And I know I mentioned on the last podcast that I think that one of the ways they could do it is start to apply more defensive pressure on the ball even if that means kind of taking a page out of the Cavs' book and doing a little, like, the kind of half-hearted full court. You know, you guard the inbound, you check them for about 4 or 5 feet, and then you kind of back off. You've got to speed them up somehow, because at this point the Cavs have established the pace that they want to play at. You know what it is. Late in the shot clock, LeBron isolation. We're going to slow it down. The thing that I think is also hurting the Warriors' transition game is they have to do so much gang rebounding because of Tristan Thompson and Timofey Mozgov that you don't see guards leaking out. You don't see Klay Thompson and Steph leaking out early because they have to have a conscious effort to work the boards or else they're not going to get it. They're going to get out-rebounded. So I think that they need to apply more defensive pressure on the ball when LeBron has it, even when Dellavedova has it. And I think that even if you speed the game up and even if the Cavs maybe kind of use it against them a little bit and they might get like a quick bucket out of it, like that's okay. As long as you're getting them to eventually play at your pace, they're better than that at the Cavs. So they can't get worried like if it backfires once or twice or someone gets a quick back cut and gets a layup. Like it's more about speeding up the pace of play and then ensuring or hoping that because you're better at that style than they are, that it'll eventually win out and that you'll eventually kind of have them playing your style and then you'll eventually get the lead and hold it, because they haven't really had much of a lead in all series. So that would be my suggestion, is more on-ball pressure and try to speed them up.
Yeah, that's definitely, you know, a good point. You know, I will say this, though. Part of that would be the Cavaliers would have to look to exploit that, and I'm not sure that they'd be willing to. You know, we've seen when teams pick up full court, you know, put a little bit of pressure on the ball, what happens is on offense you get into your sets late with, you know, much of the shot clock already gone, and if the Cavaliers aren't sending those back cuts and looking to exploit that coverage, so far in this series they've been just fine with ISOs late in the shot clock, pounding the ball, you know, and seeing what happens, you know, as the clock expires. So part of that is that the Cavaliers would have to look to exploit that. I'm not sure they're willing to do it. You know, if you make them take that full 8 seconds to get across the half-court line, 16 seconds left to get into their offense, Cleveland's probably like, that's fine. You know, that's going to be okay. So it'll be interesting to see, but it will create some opportunities. So it'll be interesting to see if Cleveland looks to exploit it. You know, you guys both mentioned the pace of the game. You know, I agree. The Warriors have to get things back to doing what, you know, got them here to this point. You look at that run that they made in the fourth quarter, in the first half of the quarter especially, there were a lot of quick shots from the Cavaliers. And the Warriors ended up with 25 field goal attempts in the fourth quarter, 65 total the rest of the game. So they were able to get the possessions up, and that certainly helped the comeback. You know, if the pace stayed the same, there's no way the Warriors should be able to overcome a 17-point deficit, but as you guys mentioned, as soon as LeBron goes out for 1 minute, you know, 8 points come off the lead, and you know he has to get back up immediately. So it'll be interesting. What do you guys think, Kurt? We'll start with you. Predictions for Game 4. What are we going to see?
Yeah, you know, I was going to say the barometer for me in the next game are the bigs for Golden State. They cannot continue to get nothing from Bogut and Barnes and Green. You know, and now Lee off the bench and Azili. They have to get more out of those guys. I mean, look, Curry and Thompson are going to do whatever, you know, they'll play better or whatever, but if those guys aren't helping, if those guys aren't adding to the offense, which was a huge part of their threat during the season, you know, look, teams loaded up on Curry at points during the season. Draymond made them pay, you know, the other guys made them pay. That, you know, Bogut made them pay. It has not happened yet. If it doesn't happen in game four, they're in a lot of trouble. You mind if I predict a close game? I feel comfortable with that. Beyond that, you know, last time they were down 2-1, the Warriors found a way to do it. So, and I picked them to win the series. So I'm very not confidently picking them to find a way to grind one out in this game. We'll see.
Yeah, it's tough because watching the game, my eyes are telling me I need to, you know, start leaning another way. Yeah. I picked the Warriors in six, so you know your loyalty to that pick kind of wants you to believe that they'll make some changes. But You know, to Kurt, I know you brought this up on an earlier podcast. A lot of times with these coaches, especially when they get in deep playoff runs and people ask them about adjustments, they'll say, you know, this is the time of year where there aren't that many you can really make. You know, your teams are who they are, and there are little things you can tweak, but at the end of the day, it's more about the habits that you've formed throughout the season, and can you, I guess, can you exploit what you do well and limit what the other team does well? And so far, the Warriors really haven't done it. I'm picking the Warriors as a fan because I hope that we get a good series. I hope that we get 6 or 7. And I think, like Kurt said, these series change so quickly. Like, the dynamic of a series can change in a single shot. And if it's 2-2, and let's say Steph kind of gets out of his funk and the Warriors get things rolling, then it can look completely different. But you can bank on LeBron being awesome again, which immediately gives the Cavs a really good shot to win. So I'm picking the Warriors, but mostly due to my loyalty to my pre-finals pick.
Yeah, I think what Kurt said is dead on. I think at this point all we can basically guarantee is a close game because of the way the first three games have shaken out. But as far as who's going to win, I mean, gosh, you know, basically impossible, you know, to predict. You know, the Warriors had a chance despite falling down 20. They had a chance. They were within one with 2.5 to go. So, you know, very tough to predict the winner. I will say, you know, despite what I said about Curry in the fourth quarter, you know, being, you know, not sustainable, which I still believe, if they go back and look at the game film, what they're going to see is that they did have success getting Curry freed up when they ran him off multiple screens, 2 screens, 3 screens, which makes, you know, a big come from the paint to make that second or third contest, and that's a long way to go. And so that gives Curry the extra time he needs to get an open look. So I think if they look at the film and if they try to use that to their advantage, maybe get Curry going early by basically turning him into Reggie Miller, right? Just running him off a ton of screens. Ray Allen, we've seen it. You know,
J.J. Redick.
Yeah, just turn him into that. I mean, put in some of those sets. You know, you got Steve Kerr, Alvin Gentry, excellent offensive minds on the coaching staff. You know, they could certainly put in a couple plays, and we saw them. We saw them at the end of last night's game. So they could certainly do that. I think if they look to do that, I think they have to get Curry going early and get his confidence, you know, dialed in for that next game. And I think if they don't do that, you know, they're going to be in trouble. And I think what also needs to happen for Golden State, they need Curry and Clay to have good games on the same night. You know, Clay had a horrible night shooting last night, and Curry, you know, we talked about he didn't get going until the last 8 minutes of the game. So, you know, I think they need Curry and Clay to both show up. I think they need to get Curry going early. And if they do those things, they'll have a pretty good shot.
By the way, Steve Kerr, stop sitting Clay and Steph at the same time for like 4 and 5 minute stretches in the first half. Just play them. They do this in every game. I know he trusts his bench, but they go through a frighteningly long stretch in every half game so far with both of those guys on the bench, and it never works out well.
Yeah, and as we've discussed, if offense is the problem, you know, play your offensive lineups and get yourself going.
Yeah.
It's another thing that we've brought up a lot, and it's one of those things where we saw it in the fourth quarter last night, and it's the fact that, you know, the Cleveland rotation is so short that the fatigue factor eventually is gonna set in and hit hard. And it hasn't really cost them a full game yet, in my opinion. You know, it came close last night. Like, I think part of, you know, we mentioned the lead kind of evaporating. I think part of that was the Cleveland legs really started to go away. And then I know there's only one day's rest and then game four. Do you guys think that this might be one of the games where fatigue finally kind of wins out and the depth for the Warriors can kind of give them the full advantage?
It's possible. I mean, look, Dellavedova did not speak to the media because he had to get an IV and treatment for cramps. Like, and actually, you know, went to the hospital. They put him there. They took him on a stretcher to the ambulance. So if he's in that kind of trouble, you know, again, Dellavedova only knows one speed when he's playing, one way to play. But if that speed just ends up slowing down slightly, or they have to give him longer breaks, if, you know, LeBron has talked about, you know, he is somebody very aware of his body, but if he starts to, like you said, break down in the fourth, this is what happened, you know, Look, we've seen this in the finals already where the Clippers were up, you know, the Clippers were up 3-1 and looked like they were going to roll. And part of what went on, it wasn't the only thing, but part of what happened in that series was that their legs gave out because of the short bench. That could happen here.
Yeah, I really think it was more of a case of, you know, fatigue factored in, but only because the lead was so big, right? I think the guys on the floor basically just took their foot off the gas, said, okay, finally we can breathe. You know, we can give ourselves a little bit of a break, but it did almost cost them. And Kurt, that's an excellent point about the Clippers series. You know, that series looked over, the Clippers were rolling, and, you know, we saw what happened. You know, all of a sudden they couldn't make shots in the fourth quarter. Blake Griffin wore down. So that's a very real possibility. I mean, look, we've already said it. The Warriors win game four, everything changes, right? A 2-2 series with two of the next three at Oracle, I think you'd have to like Golden State's chances. So definitely going to be interesting to see. All right, good stuff as always, guys. We will be back with you to recap game four after Thursday night. And for Kirk Ehlen and for Dominic Ridgard, this is Brett Politoff, and we will see you guys next time.